Case for today is 2016-2256, In Re Walters. Is it Mr. Terry, are you? No? But...
good morning, my colleague, Mr. Miller.
Oh, okay. Mr. Miller, go ahead.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Stephen Miller. For the appellant, David Walter. I'll be starting the first 6 minutes, Your Honor, and then Mr. Terry the second 6 minutes, and then we'll save 3 minutes for rebuttal. In this case, we're down to a 35 U.S.C. 112 rejection by the enduring reexamination by the patent examiner, and which was that part of which was upheld at the Patent Trial and Appeals Board. The essence of the issue is our claim amendment during reexamination, where we add a claim term, a block flight support structure in claim one, and it's the patent office's contention that that is not supporting the specification. It's our contention that it is supported.
Well, one of the things that the board was concerned about is that you seem to use block like in terms of the overall structure, but you also seem to be using block-like just to reference the side panels. So which is it?
That's the same quandary that the Patent Trial and Appeal Board gave Mr. Terry. They are not mutually exclusive as a matter of engineering. There's a 1132 affidavit that defines a block-like structure. That term, block-like structure, as is understood in the structural arts, is anything that's an assembly of constituent parts. In other words, not a unimolded piece, okay, that it's an assembly. So anything that fulfills that is defined as a block-like structure, okay? And by the way, that was never rebutted in any evidence provided by the Patent Office during reexamination.
Let me ask you, you're correct. This is the 1.132 declaration.
And correct.
It's at 177 to 178 of the Joint Appendix.
Right.
And at 164 of the Joint Appendix, in connection with the amendment, the applicant or the patent owner relied on. But then what's stated in that declaration kind of drops off or drops out of the picture, because then when you read the briefs, as I read the briefs that were submitted before the board and the argument that was submitted before the board, there seems to be no reference to that declaration. It does reappear in your brief here at 13 to 15, but there seems to be no reference to it in the board proceedings. And indeed, things seem to go off on this direction of saying that each of the elements in the frame is a cuboid structure, and that meets the block-like structure. So it seemed to me that while you had this initial statement, it was never again really presented either in briefing or in the argument before the board.
Well, it's an interesting question, I do see the confusion, and that's where I think the Patent Trial and Appeal Board was confused.
Well, it could be important though, because if one takes that initial statement in the declaration, and at page 164 of the appendix, as the applicant or the patent owner acting as his lexicographer, he seems to back off from that.
No, I understand that. We're not asserting, okay, and that came up in the appellee's brief. We're not asserting in patent parlance that the patent owner was using his quote-unquote own lexicography and defining that term. That is a term of art, and that's what the 1132 affidavit is to be understood by one skilled in the art using that term. That is a term of art.
So you're not relying on that body of cases that says a patent applicant or a patent owner can act as his or own.
No, we're not relying on that. We're not. We believe that the specification, and I'll walk through that for 60 seconds with this, exactly points out that it can be used either way and that it is consistent with the 1132 affidavit. And what was presented during the PTAB, and how, if you will, it digressed, if you will, during the PTAB, and actually during reexamination, which followed through into the PTAB, is that the examiner, Mr. Fitsuga, was given this amendment as a block-like structure, a block-like support structure, and then he chose, not us, he chose to say, take the word block, and took a Merriam-Webster dictionary off online, to say, well, a block can be a cuboid structure, which may or usually can be rectangular, but doesn't have to be. And then we, as a matter of patent office rules, had to address each and every issue raised by the examiner, even though it's not. He chose to go into the etymology of the term rather than taking the whole term in and of itself as a term of art.
But what block, term are you talking about?
Because block-like structure.
Support structure doesn't appear in the specification. And you
I'm sorry?
You keep saying block-like support structure, but that doesn't appear either in the specification or the declaration.
I would argue that, Your Honor.
Pardon?
Well, it does. It does. If you just read a sentence in the specification, you're correct. If you take that sentence, take the glossary of the items, which is in the second column of the patent, the 711 patent, which has a full column of part numbers, and then take that with the figures, the actual drawings, then it is. And that is explained, Judge Schall, by Mr. Terry and his PTAB appeal brief. Because he was specifically addressing what the examiner raised. He's answering the examiner. That's why it went in that direction. It was an issue the examiner raised.
He was answering the examiner's reliance on the dictionary.
Right. That's why that's that way.
Mr. Miller, you're almost into your rebuttal time, and I want to ask you something. I'm a little confused about how you could be both the key witness in this case, and a lawyer in it. The model rules of ethics for lawyers say a lawyer should not act as an advocate at a trial in which the lawyer is likely to be necessary as a witness.
How is it that you feel
as though you've gotten around your ethical obligation to not act as both lawyer and witness?
Several issues, Your Honor. One, that issue wasn't raised until the appellee brief.
I'm raising it.
Oh, that's fine.
To be sure that you are not acting unethically in my courtroom right now.
Okay. It's our understanding of that rule that is for fact witnesses, not for expert witnesses. That's our understanding.
Do you have any case law or support for that? Because I don't see anything in either the rule or any of the comments that would suggest that, because I asked my clerk if that were a distinction, and she could find nothing on point. Do you have anything?
I have nothing either way on point, Your Honor.
So there are two of you here, right?
Yes.
Why did you have to argue? If you're the key witness in the case, and there's a rule that says you can't be both witness and lawyer, why are you arguing?
Mr. Terry was not on this court's bar until a couple of months ago, and that's why the only reason I went on initially. I was not part of the entire reexamination.
Okay, but he was on as of a couple months ago. I don't know what you're doing
here. I can sit down,
Your Honor,
if you want. That's why Mr. Terry is here.
You've already done it. You know, so it's not like the fact that I'm bringing it up and asking why you're violating a rule of ethics, and you can say, okay, well, I'll stop violating it. It doesn't just all go away.
We believe it. I'm sorry. We have nothing on point either way.
All right. Okay, Mr. Terry, it's your turn.
Okay. May it please the court, Mark Terry, for Mr. Walter, the appellant. Judge Moore, I would like to address the question you just made, Mr. Miller. First, I want to make it clear on the record that Mr. Miller was not the attorney for Mr. Walter at the Patent Office. I was the attorney of record. Mr. Miller simply provided an expert affidavit. Subsequent to the prosecution of that patent application...
Mr. Miller is on the briefs in this appeal.
That's correct.
Do you
believe
the model rules don't apply to appellate courts?
Well, my understanding of the rule was that if at the time at the time that Mr. Miller made the declaration at the Patent Office, he was also the attorney for the applicant at the Patent Office, that there might be an issue there. But that wasn't the case. I was the attorney. Mr. Miller became an attorney on this case when we appealed, right? When we didn't get the decision we wanted at the PTAB.
Mr. Miller stood here and argued in my courtroom that I should defer to his declaration under 132, and he made the argument as the lawyer, correct?
That's correct, yes.
All right, keep going, go ahead. Why don't you move on to the merits of your case?
Very well. Mr. Miller discussed our construction of the claim term. I just want to quickly move to the epilese construction. The Patent Office would like to construe the term block, which is part of the, quote, block-like support structure, which is at issue here, to mean a solid piece of material such as rock or wood that has flat sides and is usually square or rectangular in shape. The Patent Office provides
no... I'll ask you one thing, Mr. Terry. Excuse me, I don't want to interrupt you. Mm-hmm. This point, since you're now, I guess we have to view you as the attorney here, you are not advancing the argument in this case that the patent owner acted as his own lexicographer. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Because that's what Mr. Miller said, and you abide by that.
That's correct, yes.
Okay.
Our contention is that the specification is consistent with that construction of the claim term.
Okay. Thank you. I just want to make sure I understood that. Go ahead.
Okay. So to go back to the Patent Office's claim construction, our contention is that they provide no evidence to support that. If you take a look at the appendix, we have no idea where the patent examiner came up with that claim construction. And I challenge the Patent Office to point to somewhere in the appendix where there's some evidence to support that. The examiner states that he got it from Merriam-Webster.com, but doesn't provide a printout, a URL, a description of the definition as he got it from that website. That's simply not how you submit evidence at the Patent Office.
I'm still back on this point that you refer, you concede that at least four of the six references that you cite us to where block-like appears, that those references are to the entirety of the reef structure, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So, but you want us to then say that the other two references refer to something else?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And using the same language?
That's correct.
So what if we conclude that those other two could just as reasonably refer to the entire reef structure?
That would be consistent with our contention, which is the fact that that language, block-like structure, can apply both to the overall structure and to the underlying support structure. And I would like to read that into the record, which is the fourth reference to that term, which comes from column one of the patent, which states, a block-like structure that may be constructed having a base portion.
What lines are you reading from?
That would be column 1, lines 45 and 46. And it states, block-like structure that may be constructed having a base portion to support the device. That base is part of the support structure. And that is seen in the next column, number 2, at line 40. It says, 22 base of 12, which means that the base is part of the support structure 12. If we look at figure 2 of the patent, that clearly shows the support structure indicated as 12. That clearly shows a pyramidal frame that acts as a support structure on which things are attached. And our contention is that that language there, the block-like structure that may be constructed having a base portion, indicates that that modifier, block-like structure, applies to the support structure.
What's our standard of review on that?
This is an issue of law, so it would be de novo.
No, written description is an issue of law? Written description is a question of fact.
Okay, I thought you were referring to how we're going to construe the term.
Well, written description is a question of fact, right?
Correct,
and
yes.
And so what a reference discloses and how it describes it, that's a question of fact. So
yes.
If I'm looking at that reference and I'm trying to understand what those sentences mean and when column 1 and then what's in column 2, I guess that's really my question to you, is do I give deference to the PTO's decision on that, or do you think this is part of the legal question that ought to be done de novo?
My time is up, so I'll simply say that I think it should be reviewed de novo.
Okay. Let's hear from opposing counsel, Mr. Warwick.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Can you start with that last point? Do you have a view on whether or not this particular question, how I reconcile column 1 and column 2, is part of the written description decision, which would be a question of fact, or part of a claim construction decision, which would be a question of law?
So it's both. And I think on the first point, where you have de novo review on construction or on indefiniteness, to the extent there aren't factual questions, plausibly ambiguous. Some of those terms, you could perhaps read it in a way where you'd say this is applying to the support structure. We feel, and the board felt, that the better reading of column one is that all of those references are referring to the entire reef structure, the present invention. And that present invention has sides, it has frame members.
But that's my exact question, is what the board thought about what those references were more likely referring to, i.e. the whole structure or just the base structure. Is that a question of law or a question of fact? Do I give deference? Do I not give deference? It sounds like it's part of claim construction to me, but I just want to see what your thoughts are on that.
As part and parcel of the definiteness analysis, it would be de novo review. It would be part of claim construction. But in terms of the written description question, once you have determined a construction, and if you're trying to compare that to the spec and see if there is support for the claim as construed, that's definitely a factual question. Substantial evidence review is appropriate. Now, I would like to talk about the indefiniteness question because I think that the case is most easily resolved by looking to the construction that's being advanced on appeal. Counsel just represented this morning any assembly of discrete parts. And I believe there are two problems with that that either independently could provide an easy path for affirmance in this case. And the first one is waiver. Walter, in this case, through the proceedings with the examiner, the board, this appeal, seems to keep shifting positions. The position to the board, and Mr. Walter's attorneys were pushed on this, the position was each frame member is a block-like structure, and that's at Appendix 511 in the oral hearing transcript. The expert declaration seems to say that the overall support structure is block-like because each frame member is a block. Now we have this broader argument saying that the block-like structure is block-like because it's an assembly of discrete parts. So the argument being advanced on appeal is different than the one that was advanced to the board. So we have a waiver problem. The other problem you have is that if it's simply an assembly of discrete parts, that was already a requirement of the claim. Claim 1 already said a support structure comprising a plurality of frame members. You already had discrete parts. And there's actually a first declaration that Walter doesn't mention from Mr. Miller, and that's at Appendix 115. This was before block-like was added to the claim. And in that declaration, Mr. Miller says the word structure in isolation means a group of solid elements united or connected in some manner. That seems awfully similar to the construction that's being advanced on appeal by Mr. Walter, thereby giving no weight to the block-like term that was added ostensibly to overcome the prior art. I would just say that the
stand... It seems that the primary concern the board had was they said that they felt like he was trying to use block-like to refer to different things, not just the support structure, but the overall reef, as well as the individual frame members. And now, is it completely inappropriate to use the same term to refer to different things as long as you're clear about it?
Well, I think if you're clear about it, the board was genuinely confused, it appears especially from the transcript of the hearing, about whether Mr. Walter was saying that each frame member is block-like or the overall structure is block-like. And when pushed, Mr. Walter said, it's each piece. That's at Appendix 511. And so the board rightly in their opinion said, that's inconsistent with the claim. The claim says, as amended, a block-like support structure made of a plurality of frame members. What you should have drafted, perhaps, is a plurality of block-like frame members. And it's important that Mr. Walter had the opportunity to do so. After the 112 rejections were entered, Mr. Walter did submit an additional filing with the PTO under Rule 1.116, but he did not further amend the claims, drop the term, or provide any additional clarity. This is a term that is unclear that was added by Mr. Walter to the claim, and he failed to clarify what the importance would be. And under...
It strikes me that this is something that cried out for functional claiming, but they didn't do it.
Functional claiming in terms of how the structure was built?
Yeah. In other words, they could say a means for, and they could, for creating this reef, and then they could define the structure with the frame members.
That would have been...
They would be limited to what's in the specification, but at least they would have the right to everything that's in the specification, regardless of whether it's a term of art.
That's correct, Your Honor. And they did not do that. So it's the PTO's position that the examiner correctly entered rejection under this court's precedent in Packard, which allows whenever there's language that is ambiguous, vague, incoherent, opaque, or otherwise unclear, the examiner entered the rejection. Mr. Walter was given the opportunity to clarify. He did not. That's why the board affirmed. And we would ask that this court do the same. And unless your honors have any other questions.
No, thank you, Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller, you have a little bit of rebuttal time.
To clarify, neither side has, but both sides are in agreement that the term block-like support structure can be used to describe the overall structure, but it seems that we disagree on whether or not that term can be used to describe the underlying components. What opposing counsel, I'd like to restate something opposing counsel just stated, which is what they should have drafted was, quote, block-like frame members. That indicates that opposing counsel is okay with using the term block-like to describe components of the overall structure, because the frame members are part of the support structure, and that is seen on line 41 of column 2 of the patent, which states 24 frame member of 12, and of course 12 is a support structure. And that indicates that we actually do have an agreement that the term block-like support structure can be used to describe the underlying component that comprises the overall structure.
I'm not sure, Mr. I seem to recall somewhere in the brief, in the solicitor's brief, maybe I'm incorrect on this, that while the solicitor posited that X and Y could have been done, it was not conceding that that would have rendered the subject matter patentable, or would have, you know, solved the indefiniteness and written description requirements. I just wanted to say that I'm not sure there's agreement on that.
Mm-hmm. I was solely referring to a statement that opposing counsel made a minute ago.
Yeah, and I understood counsel was sort of picking up on something that was in the brief, but go ahead.
That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you. Thank both counsel. The case is taken under submission.